Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Don't sweat the technique. Now back to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Has Derek Stingley entered the conversation as one of the top cornerbacks in the league? DJ Bieniemy had this stat yesterday after the game, talking about Stingley in coverage of one CeeDee Lamb, who I think CeeDee Lamb's one of the top receivers in football. I would put him in my top five.
Oh, yeah.
Chase, sure. Jefferson, Lamb. Who else is there? Do you still have Tyreek there?
I think he should be. I think if he has Tua all year. I think if he has Tua for the entire season, it's a different story.
Yeah, I think so, too. He's right on the cusp. You have Nico in the top five? Has Nico entered top five territory?
Not yet.
Okay. You do need a more – you usually need a bigger body of work. I'm usually a little quicker, which burns me at times.
What about A.J. Brown or – I guess A.J. Brown would be the guy in Philly, and he's been hurt.
I would take Nico ahead of Brown.
Yeah.
I would take Nico ahead of Brown. I think that you could throw in – I'm missing a big one. I know I am.
I'm thinking about the same thing.
Who have you said again?
Jefferson, Chase. CeeDee Lamb is in the conversation. I think Nico is in the top five conversation.
I'm on Ross St. Brown.
I'm on Ross St. Brown. Needs to be in the conversation for sure. I mean, Puka could be in the conversation, but he's been hurt this year, so it's taken away from his volume numbers.
Probably. Body of work.
Yeah, I would say he's in the same conversation. I mean, Nico led the league in receiving yards before he got hurt.
Yeah.
So, I think Nico's top five.
I don't know if I'd put Nico over A.J. Brown, but I think he's right there, 5-6.
I have no problem putting Nico ahead of A.J. Brown. No problem. I'm a heightist. I like tall receivers.
A.J. Brown's tall.
I'm a heightist. I like tall receivers. A.J. Brown's not that tall. A.J. Brown's
built. He's like 6'1",
6'2". He's like Debo. He's not like Nico.
Well, let's double check the height, but he's not short. He's not a little receiver.
6'1"'s not tall.
6'1"'s
not tall.
Trust me,
I know. I am 6'1".
You're not 6'1".
Who are we missing?
I think we nailed them.
Yeah.
I think that we nailed them. I think those are the top receivers in the NFL. It's clearly Jefferson Chase 1-2.
Clearly, Jefferson Chase 1-2.
Amon Ross St. Brown's production's through the roof. He's going to be in that conversation. I would have Nico in the conversation. I would have Tyreek Hill in the conversation, although he has had a down year. There are some younger players that you would think were being on the cusp. Olave, but he's been hurt. Garrett Wilson, but he's been in a terrible offense.
Waddle and Smith are kind of the same player, and I don't think either one of them are there.
They're second, third tier.
Yeah.
Those guys are. Anyways, Derek Stingley, whenever he was shadowing CeeDee Lamb for 17 routes, allowed 2 catches for 19 yards with 3 pass breakups and a pick. I hope that this teaches D'Amico Ryans, who am I to tell D'Amico Ryans how to coach a defense, but whenever Stingley has traveled with the other team's receiver, good things have happened. You hammered Amari Cooper last year in the playoffs. You hammered CeeDee Lamb yesterday. When Stingley is traveling, it is a much different defense. I think it's for the better. I think it is good. I hope that this sends D'Amico a message that when they go up against an elite receiver, you don't have to do it all the time. You don't have to do it for every single play, but critical situation when there's an elite receiver who's way better than the other team's number two receiver, can we please shadow Derek Stingley on that guy? Please?
Yeah, I agree. I think Derek Stingley has proven that the conversation has shifted and done a complete 180 between him and Sauce Gardner, because Sauce Gardner was really bad. I think it was last week's game where I saw Bart Scott just completely just selling him out and going with, you know, from the bad hip turn to the angle he took to the way that he was defending receivers and pointing out that he's had a really bad year. I think Derek Stingley continues to ascend and prove to people that he can be one of the top corners in this league. Last night, he probably should have had 3 picks. He dropped 2, had 1. He's getting better and better, and he's definitely in that conversation of best corners, one of the best corners in this league.
And one of the other things that I really like about Derek Stingley He gets asked after the game about this dominating performance against CeeDee Lamb, and I agree with you. I think he's in the conversation. And I don't watch other corners as closely as I watch the Houston Texans corners. I have a an understanding of the league, but I couldn't sit here and tell you, that guy in New York, he's really, really good. I don't watch every single snap that Sauce Gardner plays. But watching Derek Stingley play every single snap, seeing what he does to the other team's best receivers, especially when he is shadowing, he belongs in the conversation. Yes. As one of the top corners in the league. I'd be very curious, too, if he's going to be an All-Pro. I think he's in the conversation as an All-Pro corner this year. But another thing that I really like about Derek Stingley, like, he's a stud, one of the top corners in the NFL. He's asked about his performance shutting down CeeDee Lamb, and listen to his demeanor here.
What about your performance, your matchup with CeeDee Lamb?
Oh, I mean, it was all right. Left a couple players out there, but, good defense.
Maybe one of the best games of his entire career, going up against Cooper Rush, not Dak Prescott, I get that. Going up against a top three receiver in the NFL, he shuts him down. What'd you think? It's all right. It's all right. No big deal. I love that demeanor.
A little humility is always good with guys. But again, we also know that there's a lot of brash corners and receivers that really succeed and do phenomenal things too. But it is kind of nice to see, that the kid.
Stingley's not really that guy.
Yeah, he's not. And I think that's refreshing.
No, it's great. Like, I don't want Sauce Gardner. I don't want a dude who's flashy and always talking about himself. No, I wouldn't mind it. But if I had the alternative to pick which one do you want, like, let's just assume Sauce Gardner and Derek Stingley are the same caliber of corner. I understand people have opinions on that. And I bet a lot of people that are listening to us would have Stingley ahead of Sauce. Mm-hmm. And I do think Stingley's been better than Sauce this year.
This year, yeah.
But let's just call them equal for the sake of the conversation. Let's just call them equal. They're equal players. Would you rather have Sauce's mentality or would you rather have Stingley's mentality?
Stingley's.
Because, no doubt.
Because the work ethic seems to go with it. Because most times when you hear a guy that say, I left some plays out there, that means that he's trying to even get better, whereas I think Sauce would be singing his own praises and blowing his own horn.
Love that soundbite from Stingley. One unbelievable game. Has put himself on the map as an all-pro corner. And it was pretty good. It was all right.
And arguably, I know you. I think you guys mentioned he had the one pick, could have had two. Arguably, could have had third.
I said three. He could have.
Yeah. Oh, you did say three because there was a little play where Lamb would kind of ran like an out route, but Stingley saw it coming from a mile away and out positioned him to the outside and dove for the ball, got his hands on it, but couldn't come up with it.
He had two that literally were in his mitts and slipped through after he got the early one on the. Whatever the contact.
Kind of thrown right at him.
Yeah.
8-3-4-1, I think the defensive backs for the Texans should practice with the receivers this week and learn how to catch a ball. That game would have been a blowout. It's
Bullock.
They could have had the interceptions.
Center fielder.
Then again, maybe not. We've had five against Detroit. Look what happened. Yeah, and we need to get that guy's name pronounced correctly, too, by the way. It is Bullock, like you guys said. No, I know, but okay. They're not saying it correctly on the broadcast. You want to know why? Because he's not in the media guide in terms of his pronunciation. It is Bullock. Get it right, people. He said it himself on draft day, and whenever he was kicking it with Will Kunkel, he told them too. Bullock's two to me were the more egregious ones.
Yep.
Were the more egregious.
Yeah, I think they left a lot from the standpoint of that, but a lot of times too, you have to remember that guys turn into defensive backs because as a receiver, they don't catch the ball.
Come
as well.
On, cliche.
Oh, man.
Come on, cliche.
We need like an all time cliche marker to put one on the board. That's in the Hall of Fame.
Louis Riddick is still using it. People
I know.
Still
it's still a cliche. Even though Louis Riddick uses it, it's still a cliche. Yes, you're right, though, Blankers. Receivers have better hands than corners.
Yeah.
I completely agree. Bullock's been pretty sure-handed, though, this year. That was kind of uncharacteristic of him. And I think Stingley has good hands, too, relative to the position, not relative to, like, receivers. 713-780-ESPN, 9953. I love D'Amico, but to the undisciplined point, D'Amico's celebrations and acting like a player best friend yesterday concerned me. Best friend-style coaches don't work out, in my opinion. They need the I'm your boss aura.
Oh, settle down.
Yeah, seriously, like, in the heat of the moment to celebrate a big emotional play. Your players love the fact that you're willing to slap them on the back of the helmet or the pads and say, great play.
Steven Nelson didn't like it a lot.
Well, Steven Nelson's a different animal in itself with all the comments he made. But at the same time, it doesn't alter the fact that if he needs to get in someone's face or chew someone out.
Have you ever seen him do that, though? Have you ever seen him chew somebody on the sidelines? I haven't.
No, I think he's very particular about doing it when the cameras aren't around. Yeah.
See, I don't think he does it. Like, I think he's kind of like, we're grown men, we're professionals. Like, I'm not going to sit there and chew you out. We're going to sit there and have a conversation of what needs to be done. I don't think he's a rah-rah in-your-face guy.
Delivery, you might be right. I don't think he's afraid or shies away from telling a guy when they're playing less than or making mistakes.
No doubt.
But you're right. I could completely see D'Amico being a guy that's not going to like scream and yell and get in your face.
He's not afraid of confrontation.
Right.
He's just not going to be. He's not going to be Bill Cowher spitting in your face. I don't think that's the way he goes about his business and treating players. He does get. I'm not going to say he's overanimated on the sideline. Like, I'm not going to have the get off my lawn take. But I would say that he is more animated on the sideline than most NFL head coaches.
Sure, but there's a lot of prudish, old school coaches that are on the sidelines that, you know, that don't do those kind of things.
There's a lot of young coaches too who don't. Like, there's more young coaches in the NFL.
Your boy
than
Sirianni
old
would do it.
Yeah, he probably would. But like, would McVay? Would Shanahan?
LaFleur would. LaFleur does.
Really?
Oh, God. Especially when there's a negative play, too. He's animated.
I don't think there's anything wrong with it. Just talking about other coaches' demeanor and antics on the sideline.
He's
I don't
the guy
think
that'll follow a guy
with.
off the field to the sideline, too, and tell him if there's something that they screwed up.
8835, Sauce Gardner entire offseason was golf and video games. This fall off is no surprise. My dad once told me, never hire somebody with a single-digit handicap. They spend way too much time golfing than they do on their job. Huh. I think it's a fair point. 4,000 says Nico was number 15 preseason receiver. I think it's fair if he's in the top 5-8 right now. Forget about the San Francisco wide receivers. Yeah, I wouldn't have any of the San Francisco. 8835, Nico top 5. Let's put the bottle down. I don't know if he means that we're drinking because we have Nico in the top 5 or if we're drinking because we don't have Nico in the top 5.
I think he's saying
Nico doesn't belong in the top 5.
How does he not, though? I think Nico's a top 5 receiver in the NFL. I think he's closer to 5 than 1, obviously.
It's like I think Tyreek is the one that really kind of changes the dynamic of the whole conversation. Because if Tyreek has Tua all year long and he doesn't slip up, then I think it's harder to put him in the top 5 when you've got St. Brown and Tyreek and Chase and Jefferson. And then who was our fifth?
CD.
And CD.
CD.
Yeah, I think those are the front-running 5. Now, if you factor in the quarterbacks and injuries that happen to them and or their quarterbacks, then I think that, you know, Nico again. But he was hurt too. So it's hard to say with the amount of games he's missed this year that he suddenly is in the top 5.
Let's look at the just receiver yards and see what that looks. Not that that's the end-all, be-all by any stretch of the imagination. I'm just curious what this looks like after Nico Collins missing X amount of games. The number one receiver in the NFL in yards is Ja'Marr Chase. He's already over 1,000. He leads the NFL in catches and reception yards. 73 catches over one. And also leads the league in touchdowns with 12. Chase is the best receiver in the NFL.
Yeah.
No disagreement.
Justin Jefferson is 2 in terms of receiving yards. CeeDee Lamb is 3. I have no problem with him being in somebody's top 3. Mm-hmm. George Pickens, 4. I wouldn't have him as my top 10.
No.
Zay Flowers is 5. Garrett Wilson, 6. Wilson, I think, is on the cusp of top 10. He's not in a great offense, though. Terry McLaurin is currently 7th. Darnell Mooney is 8th. He's not a top 10 receiver. Mm-mm. Drake London, 9. He's on the cusp of top 10.
He could be in this – he'll be there maybe next year, yeah.
On the cusp of top 10. Brock Bowers is number 10 in receiving yards, by the
no
way.
No one can guard Brock Bowers
B.
right
Han
now.
And Askin, is Brock Bowers the best tight end in the NFL? I think it's no question about it.
Purely receiving, yes.
No question about it. Nico's now 17th in the NFL – in receiving yards. Now,
I think
if you go,
he still leads yards per game, though,
does.
Right?
He's number 1 in yards per game. He's ahead of Ja'Marr Chase in yards per game. If you go yards per game, it's Nico 1, Chase 2, Jefferson 3, A.J. Brown 4, Chris Godwin 5, T. Higgins 6, Cooper Kupp 7, DK Metcalf 8, CeeDee Lamb 9, Malik Nabers 10. I have Nico in the top 5, man.
He might be my
number 5.
I'd have him 6 or 7,
I think
depending
I got
on the
six.
Conversation.
Who
with
are the
AJ
5
Brown?
That are better?
We already did.
I think it's CD, it's Chase, it's Jefferson, it's Amon-Ra St. Brown, and Tyreek Hill.
You have Hill ahead. Okay. Yeah.
And
maybe
Nico's
6.
Then the conversation begins six. Nico or A.J. Brown at 6.
Okay. Top 6 receiver, Nico Collins.
I think he's 6th.
Is there anybody else we're missing that needs to be 6 and Nico's top 7?
No. I mean, I like Terry McLaurin a lot, but not more than Nico.
I like DK with the speed and the size and all that, but I think quarterback matters, too.
Nico's having a better year than Tyreek.
Oh, there's no doubt, and both of them have been hurt.
Yeah. I'll go 6. I think it's fair to have him 6. I'm not going lower than top 6, though. You're not talking me out of any further drop.
It's up for discussion that by the end of the year, he could be in the top 5.
Uncle Barney says single-digit handicappers are hardworking, a good analyst who are precisionist-minded. You should always hire them.
Uncle Barney's
sounds like Uncle
digit.
Barney has a single handicap.
Yeah, he doesn't anymore. He doesn't at this stage of his life.
Is Uncle Barney coming for Thanksgiving? It could get interesting.
He doesn't hit it that far anymore. He's probably too 10 off the tee.
Plays some different tees, though, right?
I mean, he hits it further than Booker T.
Well, here we go.
He does do that. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. Where are you with Bobby Slowick now after this Dallas game? Do you feel any better about first and second down play calling? 713-780-ESPN. It is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Do you know what week this is, by the way? It is Houston Blue Week. That's why I'm wearing my Houston Blue hat. You might not be able to see that in the medium of radio. But Cougar fans, it's the final home game of the season. Your Houston Cougars taking on the Baylor Bears Saturday, November 23rd, 6 p.m. The weather is going to be fantastic. It always is at TDECU Stadium. And this is your last chance to see the Cougs at home this year. Tickets start at just $15. You're not going to want to miss that. So lock those tickets in, uhcougars.com/tickets, or give them a call at 713-GO-COUGS. But don't miss the action. We celebrate Senior Day. Cheer on our team in their brand new blue uniforms. Taking on the Baylor Bears, looking for back-to-back wins over the Baylor Bears in the last 2 years. Looking for another Big 12 win as well, trying to get the fourth Big 12 win of the year and keep the bowl eligibility alive. Bring your friends, bring your family. Let's pack TDECU Stadium with that Cougar pride. Get your tickets now at uhcougars.com/tickets or call 713-GO-COUGS. Come early, be loud, and wear blue.
ESPN 97.5. Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
U of H, Cougars taking on the Baylor Bears on Saturday. A little old Southwest Conference rematch. Cougars looking to win back-to-back seasons against Baylor. Takes place Saturday, November 23rd, 6 p.m. at TDECU Stadium. Weather's going to be great. Senior Day, it's our Houston Blue game. Kind of funny they did that the same week that the Titans are coming to town. Get ready for a night of thrilling plays, hard-hitting action, and unforgettable moments. Nothing beats the tradition, pageantry, and the roar of the crowd at a Cougar football game. Tickets start at just $15. Go to uhcougars.com/tickets or call 713-GO-COUGS. Come early, be loud, wear blue as we pack the stadium for our final home game of the year as we celebrate the seniors. First 20,000 fans, by the way, receive a Houston Blue rally towel, compliments of Ford, Bud Light, the U of H Alumni Association, and ConocoPhillips, and of course, the Cougars will be wearing their new Houston Blue uniforms. Giving away a pair of tickets right now to caller number 3-713-780-3776. Caller number 3-713-780-3776. If you don't win, just $15. Go to uhcougars.com/tickets or call 713-GO-COUGS. 8835, a healthy Rashi Rice is top 10. I think he's on the brink of top 10. He's certainly not better than Nico. But I think he would be on the brink of top 10. I like Rashi Rice's game.
He's not afraid to go over the middle. He's got a lot of skill. Obviously, being on the field is a big means a lot, and he's also facing some legal stuff. But, yeah, on the field, he could be with that quarterback.
Yeah, he flees the scene. He does that. 8835, Jeremy had C.J. Stroud as the preseason number two quarterback. I don't think I had a number two. I didn't have him ahead of Mahomes, and I didn't have him ahead of Lamar Jackson. I think I had him four, but I don't remember who I had third.
I think I had him five, top five.
We'll have to go back and look at that. I definitely didn't have him. I think I had Josh Allen three.
I had Josh Allen higher than you did, I think. But
you had him two? You had him ahead of Lamar?
I think
I still had Allen three. Okay. I definitely didn't have Stroud four because I wouldn't have had him ahead of Mahomes and I wouldn't have had him ahead of Lamar Jackson. We might have to revisit that, though. After 11 weeks, where does C.J. Stroud rank now? Maybe we'll revisit that in the coming days. 5-6-6-6, yet y'all forget about Mike Evans. Yeah, Mike Evans isn't top five. Like, he's borderline top five whenever he is well, but he's not well. Like, he's also hurt.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and he's also older. I mean, for what he did in his career, he was dominant at times, but you know, he's a different receiver now, and he's a little older, but it doesn't mean he's not good, and he's a wide receiver one.
3864, Devontae Adams. See, like, this is the type of person that, like, I have these takes, and I'm not going to change them, even though they're 2 years old. Devontae Adams hasn't been a top five receiver in the last 2 years.
No, his first year in Vegas, he had a really good year, and Brian corrected me on that because I didn't even remember that he had a good year in his first year in Vegas. Since then, it's been a complete and utter fall off.
4958, single-digit handicappers are great for business. That is true. A lot of deals are made on the golf course. 1970, how did U of H get the rights for the lovely Blues? I thought they got sued for this. They got threatened with a lawsuit, and U of H said, bring it on, baby. Bring it on. They didn't cower down. They didn't bow down. And then Amy Adams Skunk realized she didn't have a case. Because you can't sue for colors.
And I'm glad they did it. Screw her.
All right, where are you with Bobby Slowick after the Dallas game? 713-780-3776. Where are you at, Blinkers?
I mean, it's a work in progress. I'm not upset with him. I'm not great with him. I wish, again, the second half is the main thing for me. Look, there was a little bit less predictability, and you ride the hot hand. Look, when Mixon's running the ball the way he's running, you have every right to keep pounding the rock until they find a way to stop you. But second half is still, there's something to be desired there. The second half, the adjustments, whatever, however you want to define it, I still need to see more explosiveness on the offense as a whole. But overall, I was fine with it.
I don't love that last sentence. Like, they put up tons of yards, nearly 400, and they had tons of explosive plays. Like, tons of explosive plays. Like, Joe Mixon had a 45-yard run.
I guess I'm still waiting for...
He had the long catch, too, where he had a 37-yard catch. Nico had a 33-yard long. Nico also had, like, a 70-yard touchdown.
Well, the one that was
called back.
That was called back. I don't think you right all the wrongs in 1 week. I think that it was better. It was also against a bad football team. Now, if they continue to do this, that's great. And like I said, and if there's a way that they can get better in the second half and put a touchdown on the board offensively in the third quarter, that'd be wonderful.
Yeah, I thought Slowick called one of his better games. And again, the competition matters. The context matters here. We talked about the offensive line preventing sacks, and they only gave up one in this game. I thought a lot of that was Bobby Slowick. Like, you noticed they were using the screen game more, quick releases. They weren't doing these stupid seven-step drops with a bad offensive line. I saw some things from Slowick that he's kind of been reluctant to do in terms of trying to get the ball out quicker. I also felt like we were watching a run-first football team yesterday, maybe for the first time. And I know that they had more passes than yards or rushes, but that's not necessarily what I mean. Because, like, you're building – using the running game to build the passing game off of that. And then you look at some of the issues that Slowick has been criticized about, like first and second downs and putting the Texans in bad situations. I felt like the Texans weren't in a bunch of third and longs yesterday.
They definitely were not.
They were much better first and second early downs than they had been
really
all year. And again,
a lot can be predicated by the fact that when Mixon's running the ball the way he is, and look, credit to Joe Mixon too, one of the better running backs you're going to find in the game today that after first contact, even when it looks like two or three guys might have stopped him, he gets low but finds a way to keep like his knees and elbows off the ground and still gets you positive yardage. But yeah, for sure it was better in terms of not putting your team behind the sticks.
I think that he was passing the ball a little bit more on first and second down too, though. Like, they were doing the quick stuff, like I was just talking about. Like, how many times did you see a screen yesterday?
Yeah.
Probably five or six times, whether you're throwing a couple to Tank, whether you threw a couple to Nico. John Metchie got a couple as well. And, like, those are extensions of the running game. Like, you do that on a first and 10, even if you're gaining 4 or 5 yards, well, now you're not in a second and 10. You're in a second and 5. So I thought Slowick to me yesterday did a lot of things that are the opposite of the reputation and the narrative that is built, rightfully so, against Bobby Slowick this year.
No, I agree with that. And I think that, like, to your point, even the inside-out routes where they start out on the inside slot and they break out to the outside for a quick 5 or 6 yard hit where they get a pad from the defensive back, you take what the defense gives you. And he did a good job yesterday. And the other thing is he didn't try to pull the gadget plays where he didn't have we were talking about feel for the game. Like, when you're getting momentum and things are clicking, that's such a hit or miss that if you get the big hit on the big gadget play, then it's great. But if it stifles the momentum of the tempo you're going at, it can be a drive killer. And we didn't see that like we've seen throughout the season. So, yeah, definitely much better.
Texter says, I really thought Slowick called a quality game. Very noticeable changes, but a head-scratcher was on the goal line. You bring in three receivers to block down. I saw Tank's little behind, blocking near the tackles, and it brought back very bad memories from last year. We had that conversation a little earlier. I'm a little bit more at ease with Tank blocking this year because it's very scheme-specific. This scheme calls for all receivers to be part of the blocking game. Yeah, I get it. Look, I wasn't very happy last year when Tank Dell got his fibula broken. I don't really mind three receivers on third and shorts and stuff like that either because you're trying to space out the box and you're trying to create a light box. 2941, Bobby Slowick is the offensive coordinator who will pass on third and 1 or inches and run on third and 20. Call him out on that. Plus the play that went forward on fourth down instead of getting the 3 points. Well, that's D'Amico's decision. Bobby Slowick's calling the play, but D'Amico's decision is to go for it. Bobby Slowick is not determining to kick a field goal or go for it on fourth down. I don't mind the pass play on third and one. He got criticized for that. It was a poor throw by C.J. Stroud. It was a third and one. They had Tank Dell on the top sideline, right sideline.
That
ran it. No, he should have been picked. He hit the defender in the back.
Oh, that one. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. It was, I mean, it was there. It was, I thought it was a good play call. It was there. Tank Dell had tons of separation. CJ Stroud makes that throw 9 times out of 10, and Stroud missed badly, and it should have been a ball that was intercepted. I don't mind that call on 3rd and 1.
Look, I mean, again, when we talk about feel, if you have a feel and you think that that's going to be there and you believe that it's not going to be a super tight window, Troy was talking about the fact that on the flip side that, you know, that because of the secondary of the Texans, a lot of the windows that Rush was having to throw to were so super tight that even the short passing game was tougher to do. If you feel like you've got something there and that's the play you call and everybody's expecting run, you catch them on their heels, it should be effective.
Yeah, and the 3rd and 20 stuff, like, how many passing plays are you going to get on 3rd and 20? Like, yeah. that's when you start playing complimentary football. Like, okay, well, this possession isn't going anywhere. We're not going to put the ball at risk and lead to a bad turnover and then great field position. 3rd and 20, 9 times out of 10, you're looking to punt and put your best chance you can to put yourself in a good spot for field position. You're trying to get 10 yards there.
Yeah, you're just flipping the field to make sure that they have a long way to go. And it sets you up to get the ball in good position the next time you do it. But more so than not, 3rd and 20 is a draw play,
yeah.
a short screen pass at mm-hmm. best. But you aren't trying to get all 20 in the air.
Yeah, I'm not huge on the, you got to throw the ball 3rd and 20, get it deep downfield. Like, there are times for it. But most of the time, you're going to see draw, you're going to see screens. And that's every quarter.
Dari did a good job on that one where he almost got it. He got like 14 or 15 of the and got it close.
Yeah, he made it respectable. Almost got there, you're right. All right, CJ Stroud, what did we think of his performance yesterday? You've heard the narrative. You've heard people talk about the sophomore slump. You've heard the regression word whenever you've mentioned CJ Stroud. I gotta admit, I'm starting to see it a little bit with CJ Stroud. Well, great, Stroud, when we return, it is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Live in the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees. Now back to Joel and Jeremy.
They pass on the field goal try. Stroud throws, pass, picked off. Intercepted. That's Hooker. And Malik Hooker with a much-needed takeaway for this Dallas defense.
I thought that was a Harden thing. C.J. Stroud, 23 for 34 yesterday. 257 yards, no touchdowns, a pick. 51.6 QBR, 77.7 rating. Those are the numbers. The interception there. What did you think of C.J. Stroud's performance yesterday?
It's a C. To me, just honestly, it's a C. I was extremely frustrated with the pick. I thought that he left some. I don't want to say ever an easy throw for an NFL quarterback, but what we know C.J. to be, I felt like there were some throws where his internal clock was telling him to hurry and panic a little bit more than we saw in the past. The throws weren't accurate where they have been in the past. He got the win, so that's great. But overall, to me, you know, and it's a tough scenario because of the fact that you have to try. You're telling someone, hey, you have to stop panicking and thinking you're going to get crushed when you've been hitting it as much as he has.
Yep.
But overall, against that team and the way he played with what he left out there, he didn't have any touchdowns either. And the pick, I'm going to give him a C.
Yeah, that regression word that a lot of people have been hesitant to use. I've been hesitant to use it. I see it. I do see some regression in Stroud's game. I don't think that Stroud's playing is free, is loose. He's not as accurate with the football as he was a year ago. And there are a lot of things that go into that. I don't think it's Stroud's talent. I think it's because of the conditioning of the offensive line that he has been getting his brains beaten in consistently week in, week out. And I think that over time, that starts to take a toll on a quarterback. And I'm seeing that toll. I am seeing CJ Stroud not play at that high level that we saw him play at late last year, maybe even early this year. And there were some specific plays that you can look at where I think it's noticeable. The Cowboys are not a good football team. You rolled them by 24, and Stroud's making some plays out there. You're like, yeah, I didn't see Stroud do that consistently last year in a negative way. The interception that we bumped back with, that was a poorly thrown ball. And yeah, like Nico's there, and like Stroud's capable of making the throw where he can feather it over that first layer of defense underneath the safety, and he's capable of making the throw. I don't agree with Aikman saying that if he let him up the seam, it was a touchdown. I don't agree with that.
No, the defender was playing it over the top.
But completed pass, certainly.
I also looked at that play and thought the out route was there almost more so.
Are you talking about Dari?
Yeah.
I had that in the notes. Like, yep. That was a poorly thrown ball. C.J. Stroud's capable of completing that pass. Of those two options that you have there, Dare was wide open for what would have been an easy first down.
As Aikman said that was an easy throw to Nico.
I don't think it was an easy throw.
No, I thought it was easier on the out route.
Yeah, I don't think that the throw to Nico is an easy throw. It's one that he can make, and he probably makes more than he misses. I thought that look, it's easy. It's hard to jump off your progression whenever the guy's open. I'm sure the Nico was probably his first progression on that play. And he's like, okay, I'm capable of making that throw, so I'm not going to go to my other progressions. I get all of that. In a perfect world, I wish he threw the ball to Dare.
Yeah, Dare was the right play there. I'm still not totally convinced, though, that there wasn't a miscommunication more so than a poorly thrown ball by Stroud. Like, watching the replay a few times, like you said, Jeremy, Aikman kept saying, well, if you lead him up the seam, it's a touchdown. The defender was playing over the top. That looked like Nico was reading the coverage of the defender and decided to kind of settle it down or bend it towards the inside, and Stroud read it wrong.
A little bit of an option route.
It wasn't the throw itself, but a miscommunication between what Stroud saw. And I think Nico saw right, so you could still blame Stroud. But it looked like Nico was trying to kind of sit it down because the defender was playing over the top.
It's kind of a choice there that he has, that Nico has. I wondered the same thing, because that was a wildly inaccurate ball if that was not the case. But the giveaway to me as to why that's not true is Stroud's reaction. Like, Stroud had the reaction of, oh my goodness, I missed that so badly. And maybe to your point, it's because I missed the read on
Nico
saw. But the body language to me screamed, I made a wildly inaccurate throw. And maybe I'm off there, but I am a body language expert. So that's
a
fact.
It's true.
Body language or not, facial expression said to me, I really screwed up there.
He might say that if he made the right or the wrong read also. Like, oh, my God, the defender was over the top. I should have let it to Nico when he sat down.
And he wasn't asked about the interception, too, which annoys me. So we can't hear C.J. Stroud talk about what he saw in that play. Like, we don't know. We don't know the answer. Stroud was not asked and obviously didn't answer.
He believes he can make every throw in the book,
as he
should. And I believe the facial expression was, I missed that one.
Yeah, I thought so too, but it could be I missed the read instead of I missed, with the accuracy.
I legitimately had both options. They were both right there, depending on your degree of difficulty. That's up for discussion.
I just don't think he came off his first progression. I think Nico's your first progression there, especially on a fourth down play, and he thought he was capable of making the throw, which he is. I just don't think he ever saw Dare.
It was Dare on the out route?
Yep.
Well, then think of it. Of the two guys, who am I going to? I'm going to trust no matter what Dare can do in the passing game.
I'm
going to Nico number one.
Yeah, Dare's never going to be your number one progression on that play unless he's hot and you see a blitz. Stroud's accuracy's down, like the whole ball placement. And you still see it from time to time. It's just not at that consistent level where he's putting the ball right on the dot every single time. A second down play after the fake punt. Like, this is usually first or second down. You're probably looking for a big play. Like, you see this in football all the time.
Is that
you get a turnover.
And Tank had to dive?
No, this is more just like what he's looking at.
Oh, I'm talking about the second play
there
after
was a
the
few
fake
of those.
Punt. I thought that there was a over the middle kind of a slant.
No, this was a sack.
And he skipped it.
Oh. This was his only sack. And I think it was an avoidable sack, too. Like, we talked about the offensive line, protecting better. They only give up the one sack. I feel like this is one where you probably should not have had the quarterback get sacked. I feel like it was on Stroud a little bit. To me, he was big game hunting. And we've seen that at times from Stroud. Stroud's even talked about it. He said, I need to be better at taking the singles. I need to be better at taking what the defense is giving me. And this is a perfect example of not seeing that. Second down play, after the fake punt, he's looking for the touchdown. He's looking big.
Woods was in double coverage.
Well, I couldn't tell you. Like, I don't know. He takes a sack. He had two short routes that were wide open. And, like, it was a four-man rush, so I can understand Stroud sitting, reading the defense. They're sending four. My offensive line's got that. But you do have to have a little bit of feel if the defense does beat you with a four-man rush. And they had two guys that were absolutely wide open. There was another play later in the game whenever the Cowboys jumped offside. Remember this? Remember the Cowboys jump offside, flag flies in the air? Do you remember what C.J. Stroud did on that play?
He threw it away, didn't he?
He threw it away.
Yeah. Free play and
he threw it away. You got to have a little bit of awareness there. Like, I think that the defender jumped. Corner of my eye. I see the referee throw the flag. This is an obvious take a shot situation. And C.J. Stroud, not only did he not take a shot, he threw it away on a free play.
The worst thing you
can do
in that play.
Can't do that. The third and one. This is the one that was criticized from Slowick. What's he doing? Running the ball or passing the ball on 3rd and 1. Outbreaking route. Tank Dell has 3 yards of separation. This is a play that C.J. Stroud makes in his sleep. He makes this throw in his sleep. He throws it so far behind Tank Dell that the recovering corner, who is running for his life trying to get Tank Dell because it's about to be a completed pass, hits him between the numbers on the back of his uniform. Wildly inaccurate throw from C.J. Stroud. And these are the little things that I think whenever you get hit week in, week out, you start to play on your heels. You start to play a little timid. You don't have that. You don't have that flow. You don't have that rhythm. And I'm seeing it with C.J. Stroud, even in a game that you won by 24, even a game where he was okay. Like, he wasn't awful. He was okay, especially if you take away the interception. But he's not playing at that high level like we saw at the end of last season.
Yeah, he's skittish. The internal clock is ticking a little faster. And again, you can't fault him because of the fact that he's gotten the hell beat out of him in the last several games.
No, I would agree with that. Like, I'm not putting the blame as to why his production has went down on C.J. Stroud. I think it's been beaten into him.
I think it's correctable. Kind of to that point.
Sure.
I think it is correctable because once he has more confidence that he can set his feet, have his normal mechanics, and he's able to actually get back into that rhythm, I think a lot of this corrects itself. And there was one more missed throw I'd like to throw in there. There was a play, I think it was the drive where they ultimately settled for a field goal in the third quarter. He had a third down slant pass to Mixon. Mixon was wide open, would have walked into the end zone, and Stroud put it just about a foot too far out in front. Mixon kind of had to stumble forward to try to catch it, didn't come up with it because he's a running back. Puts it on target. Mixon catches that easily.
But didn't that hit him in the forearm and the elbow?
Yeah, I thought that was more on Mixon myself.
I thought Mixon should have caught that.
I did too.
Yeah, for sure.
Right, but Mixon's having to stumble trying to reach out and catch the ball.
I thought he was more right here, and it skipped through both arms.
He stumbled.
Once he started stumbling forward.
See, I think the stumble happens after he misses the pass.
I do too. I thought that was a catchable ball, and he didn't have the one arm up.
Yeah, he definitely stumbles. There's no argument that he stumbles. I just think that the stumble happens after he kind of, drops the pass. It wasn't a great throw. It wasn't the perfect throw that C.J. Stroud's capable of. Like, he puts it on the dot. Like, Mixon had to do a little bit of work. But it was a catchable ball.
And yeah, I think the stumble
happened after he missed it.
Like, I think obviously if Nico's the target, Nico catches it. But when you're throwing to a running back, things got to be a little bit more perfect. And it was a little too far out front from the couple of views I saw, and it caused Mixon to kind of lean forward and stumble and not come up with it.
Watch that again in your all-22s.
I remember that play specifically. I felt like
that ball was right where it needed to be, and it skipped right through that V.
It might have been a little low from, like, perfect placement, but I think if Mixon makes it clean catch, I don't even think he comes off his feet. I think he makes the catch running, maybe not in stride, perfectly in stride, but I don't think it was like low where he had to make like a sliding effort.
And the thing is, look, I think that when everybody's saying he's having a sophomore slump, I think I'm quick to defend him because I don't think it's anything to do with his ability. I think that all the ability is there. He's still got all the tools. He can still make all the throws. I think this is all predicated on the fact that his offensive line has been less than. He has gotten the hell beat out of him. And because of that, his internal clock is forcing him into making throws not the way he's accustomed to making them.
The concern would be, in like the ultimate fear, and here comes fear-monger Branham, would be if you never get that comfort back.
Right, it's the David Carr thing. Yeah, where if you just get it, so the CTE of just getting crushed so many times that now you don't even want to audible because you're afraid you're going to get crushed the minute you take that next half step or wind your arm back.
Yeah,
you hope that it's not long term, but it's understandable why this year is different than last year. If you want to call it the numbers don't lie, so if you want to do it by the numbers, he's having a sophomore slump. It's hard to argue with it because of the fact that the numbers are down.
7218, league has made a bit of an adjustment on Stroud. He needs to adjust some to them as well. Play calling can make a difference and protect him, certainly. I think an early Seattle Russell Wilson's a good model. Good running game defense and using his mobility some will make a huge difference when he makes adjustments. He's going to be real good just learning a bit this year. I think it's a perfect take. I think it's a great take, 7218. 8807 saw a stat recently that Stroud is ranked around 30th in on-target throws. That's not good. That's not good. Now, the pressure rate's going to lead to that, too. Like, C.J. Stroud's one of the highest pressured quarterbacks in the NFL. So if you have a quarterback who's getting pressured at one of the highest rates in the entire league, I think there's correlation that quarterback's probably going to be towards the bottom on on-target throws.
Yeah, I agree. I think that has a ton to do with it. If he's just got a clean pocket and he's just sitting back and those throws aren't on time, that's one thing. But when you go back and look at the film and watch many of the games the way we all do, to see the fact that most times in the last, for almost the entire season, he has got someone on his back pocket almost every time he's looking to complete a pass.
Yeah, clean pocket obviously is going to be more accurate than with a messy right. pocket or being pressured. So you gave him a C. I'm going to give him a C minus. What do you give him, Brian?
A C. I think C is fair.
A good, fair C. All right, 713-780-ESPN. What is your car wreck of the day? Car wreck nomination, 713-780-ESPN. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, a word from our good friend Doc Linville. Doc Linville, best in the business at helping you to get your hair back. He does so many things so well. He does spa treatments. He does Botox. He does plastic surgery. But for guys that are losing their hair, he is a game changer because he gets your hair back. And it's not the sprays and the creams and the foams that gimmick and mask the problem. It's actually fixing it once and for all. And as it was explained to me in a free consultation that I had with Doc and his staff, it really makes perfect sense. He takes hair from where you're never going to lose it. Genetically, you never lose the hair on the sides and the back of your head. He puts it where you need it most. Maybe some of you have that shiny spot up on top and back. Maybe others are losing their hairline going from a forehead to an 8 head. Regardless of where the hair loss is occurring, he can fix it. It's like taking and re-sodding the parts of your scalp where you need hair and don't have it anymore. That's what the NeoGraft procedure is. And if it's the fact that you have follicles there and you see the hair, they're just not as thick and strong as they used to be, PRP treatments might avoid the NeoGraft procedure. It's like fertilizing your lawn, getting it to be thick and strong and lush again without even having to go to the steps of taking the NeoGraft. Either way, both work. And that's why I'm here to tell you about them, because I've had both. I had the NeoGraft, and then I followed up with PRP treatments. The results, unbelievable. I got my hairline back. I have hair in front. I have confidence in the fact that the hair is back. And it was a game changer for me. He can do the same for you. You get a free consultation because you're listening to me and you want to talk to him. That same consultation I got, you don't have to pay $150 like people off the street. Just go to 975hair.com, set up a first consultation. It's free of charge, no commitment to be made, signing on the dotted line or money out of pocket. Just them explaining to you how they can possibly help. And then you asking questions to get the answers you need to see if it's something you may consider. Think about it. You don't have to do it. But if you do, I'm here to tell you it works. It's a game changer, and the hair is going to be with you for the rest of your life. Check them out today. Go to 975hair.com.
ESPN 97.5.
You all right?
My leg is broken. The bone's coming through.
Bone, you prick! Where's my money?
This is the car wreck of the day.
What are you nominating for car wreck of the day? 713-780-ESPN. HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Soccer Matters in Glenn Davis follows us at 6 o'clock in Hall of Fame. Brad Gilmore, and then who's the other one? Stevie Ray?
That's his brother.
Oh, most famous brother of Harlem Heat. Oh, but Booker T, I guess. Glenn will be talking about the U.S. men's national team after their 4-2 win over Jamaica. Glenn breaks it all down, and then also how Houston can optimize the 2026 World Cup. Can't wait for that. That's going to be awesome. World Cup in
that
Houston.
Game here in Houston.
Jamaica has a soccer team?
They do. They lost to the U.S. men's national team 4-2.
I prefer their bobsled team. But...
Great the joke.
Not a good one, I'm aware.
Car wreck of the day. There you go.
Brian wins.
First
good night, everybody. Tip your bartenders and wait step on the way out.
All right, what do you nominate for the car wreck of the day?
I'm going to go with officiating last night as it relates to Houston sports. The horrible call for the penalty on the hit that Petrie and Al-Shaair put on the receiver for the Cowboys. And then, of course, the Rockets debacle with Giannis stepping out of bounds. And that was just, at that moment in the game, don't tell me tomorrow you're sorry, because it doesn't change the outcome from that point on with the two-minute thing with the NBA. Officiating sucked last night.
I do like it whenever they tell you that they were wrong, just because we can bash the officials even more. Yeah, like it gives you proof, right? Like we're bashing the officials, then they tell us, oh, we did get it wrong. Well, now your official bashing has now been validated.
I guess. It's just that it's
like
be nice
proving a crime.
If you admitted to, you know, game-changing bad calls, that there would be some kind of ramification or something. It's just, that's the frustration of you admit it, but it doesn't change the outcome.
No, I get you on that. And you're, I mean, yes, absolutely. But would you rather them admit it or not admit it?
I guess it's better than the arrogance of trying to tell me that it's black when it's white and say, you know, that we didn't miss a call.
Which of the, okay, so the Petrie hit, I don't even know the receiver he had. What, how egregious.
It was the
secondary tight end.
No, it was Luke Schoonmaker, the tight end, yeah.
What was the egregious level of that one? Scale 1 to 10, 10 being the worst.
Oh boy, I'd say it's a 9.
Really? That high?
I was going to go 8.
I was going to go 5. Like, that's a bang-bang one. Like, that's so close to being a penalty, and it's not. What is the egregious level of the Giannis stepping on the baseline?
That's a 10.
That's easily a 10.
That's a 10. At that point in the game,
and to see,
not looking
to have the visual proof of a referee that wasn't even looking for his responsible, what his responsibility was, which was that end line.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Be on your keys, bro. I think that it's easily the NBA official over the NFL official. Yeah. Like, NFL, bang, bang, so fast, speed of the game. Like, this is literally, is he on the line or not? And you're not even looking. Like, that to me was
critical,
way worse.
Critical moment in the game.
Absolutely. I'm going to nominate the sheet of metal falling at AT&T Stadium. They've had some weird things happen there. You had this sheet metal falling yesterday that could have sliced somebody in half. Might not be heavy, but it could slice somebody in half. And then you had, like, the runaway cart some years ago.
The curtain.
Poor Jerry Woodley, the curtain, all of this. Poor Danny Amendola's father. Yeah, AT&T Field, I think it's cursed. The Cowboys haven't won a game there all year.
Jake Paul has more wins in that stadium than the Cowboys do.
Iron deficiency. Mike Tyson looks like an old man in a wheelchair. Like, the stadium's cursed.
Packers have more playoff wins in that stadium than the Cowboys do.
It's a cursed stadium.
That's an amazing stat.
They need to tear it down. Jerry Jones sold his soul to the devil for that stadium.
I think he sold his soul to the devil.
I think Houstonians would say,
stadium.
Let it keep being cursed.
It's cursed. The curse of Jerry Jones.
Good.
Mike Karek of the Day nominee. I don't know if you guys saw this story, but apparently the NFL would like to flex out the Monday Night Football game coming up between the Cowboys and the Bengals because the Cowboys suck. But they can't because that's the game that they're promoting the Simpsons animated like side cast. And they've already done too much work putting in Bengals and Cowboys related things. Like it's too far gone that they can't go back and change the matchup.
That's like
so
where you can watch the animated version of the game.
Yeah, I guess so. It's supposed to be, because they've done this before with a Toy Story, I think it was. I don't remember which game it was. I think it was an Amazon game. But apparently they've done too much work to put the Bengals and the Cowboys in the Simpsons world. They can't go back and they're stuck with it.
That's a dumb reason. I don't think that you should be able to flex out of Monday night games, though.
Why?
Because you have traveling fans and it ruins
Monday
their schedule.
Sunday nights.
Yeah, Sunday for sure.
The same
I don't care about Sundays.
Yeah.
But I don't think that you should be like rescheduling and flexing games from Monday to Sunday and Sunday to Monday. Once the day is out, the day is set in stone, in my opinion.
And you've been, as a football team, you've been planning on that game for weeks. So, yeah, I would agree with that.
Hawaii AD Craig Angelos has been dismissed by Hawaii outgoing president David Lastner. Effective December 1. No reasons provided, but Angelos, who was at Hawaii for just 18 months, recently negotiated Hawaii's full membership into the Mountain West, saving the school $1 million annually in travel subsidies. So the outgoing president sacks the AD. Isn't that that's bizarre? You're outgoing. What are you doing?
And on that note, did you see Tom Herman fired his DC 2 weeks ago? Tom Herman got fired, and they hired the DC back.
No kidding.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Yes.
Tom Herman got $4.1 million, though.
Oh, boy.
He's a winner. All right, what's winning here?
Cowboys Stadium?
I think the sheet metal.
Yeah, Cowboys Stadium.
NBA referee's pretty good, though. It's a tie. You both win. That does it for us. Thanks to Brian for the hard work. He's Blank. I'm Brian. I'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. Glenn Davis, Soccer Matters, right now on ESPN 97.5.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.